Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Surf Splendor. I'm your host, as usual, David Scales. And before we get into the bulk of today's show, a couple little orders of business to attend to. Firstly, is just that we've updated our website, the music archive on our website, with a Spotify player. So for every episode, there's a Spotify playlist with each song from each episode, all the way episode one through, you know, current episode, which I think is 37, or today is 38. So if you use Spotify, you can go on to our site and either play it from our site or just search on Spotify for Surf Splendor, and you have access to all of our playlists there. So check that out. And then, of course, on our website, all past episodes are archived for free as well. If you're new to the show and you haven't heard the past 37 episodes, everything is there, archived for free. And each show actually has its own page dedicated with the related media. So in today's show, you know, we talk about a couple of different surf videos, and so we link out to all that stuff. Everything can just be found on one page on surfsplendorpodcast.com. So check that out. And then also feel free to share the show with friends from there. Post today's show on their Facebook wall or tweet it to them or whatever. And that really just helps grow our show, which we really need it to do. I mean, it certainly has grown and it continues to grow every month. So I appreciate you sharing. But again, the more listeners that we have, the more shows we'll be able to produce and also just attract bigger fish, you know, attract bigger guests and industry personalities all the way up till Kelly Slater, which is the ultimate goal, of course, for everybody in the surf world. But thank you for listening, as always. And then if you listen to the show in iTunes or Stitcher, just make sure to rate and review the show there. Again, that serves to the same effort of helping the show kind of grow and be found by others. So that's it. That's it for business. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. Just search Surf Splendor. That's where you'll find it all. And enjoy today's show. It's an episode of Surf News with Scott Bass. And I will be back at the end of the show to close us out. Thanks again.
Down the line, Surf Talk Radio. Scott Bass and David Scales with you. David, of course, how would you say it? What did you co-host
this show, then the weeks that we have off from this show, I publish my own show called Surf Splendor, which it's different than this show because this show we talk surf news and it's always you and I. Sometimes there's a guest, but with Surf Splendor, it's profile pieces or just conversations with people in the industry. Steve Pesman of the Surfers Journal, for example.
It only took me 15 seconds to have an old man moment there where I couldn't think of the word that I wanted to say.
Well, we haven't actually reset that kind of conversation in months, probably, so it's worth saying for new listeners, I guess.
Yeah. So surfsplendorpodcast.com, that's David's website. I would urge you to go there. And then my website, down the line.
Surf Talk.
It's down the line radio. DowntheLineRadio.com. Oh, man.
Yeah. DowntheLineRadio.com. Two old man moments in 30 seconds.
Yeah, very good. Now, it is May 13th. It's a Tuesday here in Southern California. We have a very strong, incredibly strong, and rare Santa Ana for the springtime.
Rare, but coincidentally, we had it last time we recorded this show 2 weeks ago to this day.
Do you think that this speaks to global warming and the change in the atmosphere and all of that stuff? Do you believe in climate change? Do you think it's occurring on a drastic scale, not like on an anormal scale?
I have no idea. I don't think that it's happening, but I don't not think that it's happening. I'm not invested or educated or up to date on the information well enough to form an opinion. Is it happening, Scott?
That was a hell of a backpedal there, pal.
Well, honestly, I've seen things change, but I mean, the world's been around for so long, it's hard to say whether things are changing in decade spans.
I would agree with that. I think that the sample size of mankind being on the Earth is too small to determine. Yeah. Plus, I think planet Earth can take care of itself. It's, we're just a little pimple on its bottom, to be quite frankly.
To an extent, but I don't know. The Santa Ana winds, we have them occasionally, normally,
right? In the spring,
right?
It's rare.
Okay.
It's not a springtime thing. Usually spring is onshore northwest winds.
Yeah, for those who don't live in the area, which is the vast majority of listeners, the Santa Ana winds basically create an offshore flow. So in Orange County, if there's swell running when those winds happen, you get ideal surf conditions. And the 2 weeks ago when it happened, that whole swell was featured on Surfline. They did a big feature on, it was all of the swell throughout California, but a lot of the photos came from Orange County because we had the favorable winds.
And today we have, as I mentioned, we have these beautiful offshore winds, real strong, like Hawaii. It's sunny and clear and dry and no humidity. But the waves, there's no waves today, so it's pretty small.
I know. I'm going to try to surf on my way home, just on like a single fin or something. But last time we recorded, I texted you that evening when I got home, because on the way home from where we're recording this show, which... Let's toss to that, actually. Where are we recording this show?
Well, we're broadcasting live from the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center in San Clemente. And David and I would urge you to come by and visit and check out the boards and check out the photographs and check out all the history and culture and heritage that is a part of the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center here in San Clemente. Surfingheritage.org is the website.
Yeah, so we were recording the show here last time, San Clemente, and then I was driving north. And I pulled into Newport Beach and surfed the afternoon session with the favorable winds. And there was like maybe 3 to 5 foot combo swell running. So it was peaky. It was honestly like ideal conditions for Newport. Probably a foot or two smaller than ideal, but still shoulder to head high. And I sent you a photo or two after that. I surfed for 3 hours. It was unbelievably fun. Like one of the most memorable days from Newport Beach that I've had in a long, long time. Little barrels, like guys who could barely surf, getting barreled and spit out of waves. You just stand there basically and get spit out.
Nice.
So that was awesome.
Good stuff.
I have a question for you though, just kind of talking about personal surfing experience as you go through different phases in your life where you have responsibility,
Yes.
I got like 5 or 6 waves that day that I was pretty psyched on, like good little barrels, and then one or two that were actually really good. One of them was good enough. It was a backhand barrel going left, like had to kind of work through it, got spit out. It was awesome, Awesome enough to that a guy paddling out paddled up to me afterwards and was like, dude, that was such a sick wave. But my question to you is like, as cool as it was, it didn't feel as cool as I remember surfing feeling when I was younger. Like it happened and I was psyched, but I wasn't giddy with excitement. I was just kind of like satisfied with excitement.
Some of this, I think has to do with, what is our perception of surfing? What is the reality? Would you surf if nobody watched you surf? Sometimes, you know, we surf because we want to get, you know, as kids, we want approval from our friends, you know, our fellow surf buddies.
Right.
We want them to, and we want people to watch us surf. And it's kind of a vanity play. And it's an ego stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you get to that place where you're like, you know what, him paddling up to me and saying, hey, that was a great wave, didn't feel quite as good. It sort of begs the question, would you surf if there wasn't anyone watching you?
Yeah, that
you know?
Is a good
And if
question.
You did, how would you ride the wave?
Very differently.
Yeah.
I would have more fun if nobody was watching, I think. I'd be less kind of self-conscious.
I think that might speak to why you're kind of questioning
yeah.
your enjoyment level. You
yeah.
know, it's because, you know, what are you doing it for? Are you doing it for partly for an ego stroke or partly because you just want to rinse off the stress of the day?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and so I think a lot of things come into play there.
Yeah. Well, I think as a whole, the experience is more satisfying. I don't have the huge highs and huge lows. You know, like catching that wave didn't spike my excitement level. But when I go home at night or throughout the course of the week, I might not surf for another week. I'm still living off that kind of enjoyment or the satisfaction of having accomplished, you know, something that I enjoyed doing. Whereas in the past, it's like I'd get that spike of excitement. But the next day, if I wasn't at the beach at 6 a.m., I would then be spiking with a low, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I do know. I follow that completely. And I think it's important that you try to get in the water more. I don't think once a week is enough for you.
That's not true. I mean, I was surfing a lot, especially during that run of swell, but I was just using that as an example.
And to further that point, though, that means having equipment so that you can get in the ocean every day.
Right.
And it means riding a stand-up board if you have to do a long-distance paddle.
Mm-hmm.
It means riding a longboard, riding a fish, riding a shortboard, taking a hand plane if you want to go to the wedge and get wet.
Yeah.
But get in the ocean.
Yeah.
Because it's, especially as we get older, it's easy to kind of get kicked off the horse and not get back on. And I think it's important for our stress level to stay in the water.
I know you got an email to read, but I've got a segue based on your point,
yeah.
which was a couple days after that swell, it had kind of gotten a lot smaller and I was not psyched to go surf, just my normal equipment having had those great waves. And Surfer Magazine and probably the Encyclopedia of Surfing also posted a little tribute video to Derek Hind. Did you see any of that stuff?
No, but I can imagine. I've seen plenty of what Derek does. So
yeah.
The fin free stuff is incredible.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was like they posted a video of him riding kind of knee high right on a fin free surfboard doing little slides. And he has enough channels in the bottom of the board where he can get drive out of it. But then he would break free of the drive and go into a slide. And it looked so fun and so rad that then when I was at the beach the next day and the waves were 1.5 feet, I'm like, screw it, I'm going to go finless. And so I did like 2 or 3 days straight of trying to surf finless, and it was mind opening.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Difficult, I bet.
So difficult. Like, I learned from watching him just to stay super low.
Yeah.
Almost in like a drop knee stance almost, you know? But I was able to really figure it out and have a blast doing it, like where I could kind of drive down the line a little bit and then at the appropriate part go into a spin and come out of the spin. And it was like a day where, kind of to your point, I wouldn't have paddled out. And I ended up surfing for 2 hours, just being completely challenged. New muscles were challenged too. Like I was sore in different ways because I was so low the whole time. But I just had it was a radical experience, you know?
Yeah, guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a yeah, guy moment. Right
yeah,
there.
It was. Okay. I'll post the video on surfsplendorpodcast.com of Derek Hind for people to see.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Jay Bay footage of him too, like
yeah.
a double and triple overhead Jay Bay
He's
going finless.
Yeah.
Crazy. So fast too.
Yeah.
You can go so fast. So.
Well, hopefully we've inspired somebody to try that. Well, I'll get to this email. Teddy Allen from Miami Beach, from South Beach, Florida, sends us an email. And he says, I was paddling out yesterday afternoon after listening to the show. And this occurred exactly when you guys were debating the surfboard as art. Mr. Porpoise reminded me what real art really is. It is an expression. With all due respect, I disagree with your assertion that the surfboard is a piece of art. While many surfboards can be unique and can be crafted by legends, the material itself is not the art. Instead, the board is simply a tool for the artist, or in this case, the surfer, to display artistic expression through riding waves. So in my opinion, the surfboard is analogous analogous to a paintbrush. The brush is not the art, but it serves as a tool for an artist to produce art. Likewise, the board is simply a functional tool for surfers like you and me to express our artistic outlet. And this is exactly what you want. So Teddy brings up a great point. And then at the end of his email, he says, hey, you guys should talk about Mason Ho. He's probably today's hottest free surfer. Admit it. We love watching that whippersnapper, at least for now. So I know you have some stuff about Mason Ho we'll get into in a minute. But Teddy brings up some great points. And one great point, that the board isn't the art, it's the tool.
I really like Teddy's enthusiasm or like investment in the show, you know, to actually kind of go into deep thought about what it is we were talking about, which our point was kind of in reference to the boardroom show, which you're hosting this weekend, and which is just honoring board builders. And as much as I like Teddy's point, and I really like, I think he has a valid point, I would argue a separate point, which is that both things are artists. I agree, like the surfer is the artist expressing himself on a wave, but the craftsman is undeniably an artist too, and they're in fact crafting this block of foam, which is more analogous to a sculptor with, you know, either clay or marble or whatever the medium is. And what I think our point, maybe we didn't really talk about it enough last time, our point was that surfing is the most unique thing because it's actually the craftsman creating functional art. So the paintbrush thing isn't really a true example, and there probably isn't a true example out there that you can compare surfing with, and that's why we love it so much. It's one artist creating a functional art form that another artist can then use.
Yeah, and you could take it a step further and just say perhaps if there were craftsmen that were making paintbrushes and each one was completely different, no two paintbrushes were the same, and each was made with different horse hairs and different types of materials that would make for the paintbrush to be used on the canvas in a different way, then we would have the, what's the word I'm having a problem?
Appropriate metaphor.
Yeah, there you go. So
there's probably knife makers, you know, like Japanese knives that are, you know, incredibly meticulously made, that tradition's been passed down for centuries or whatever. And but then there's just knives that you can buy from Cutco or whatever it is, you know?
Walcut. So,
yeah.
Cut Mart.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not an ad for Cutco.
Cutco. Is there a place called Cutco?
Yeah, it's like a door-to-door knife sales thing, you know? Direct sales thing.
Okay, fair enough.
But at any rate, yeah, that's a great email.
Yeah, Teddy Allen, thanks, buddy, for the email, and thanks for listening in South Beach. And Teddy hopes to get away from South Beach and get back to where there's actually waves that break.
Man, I've seen some good waves in South Beach, though.
It's rare.
Nice scenery, too.
It's beautiful. It's warm, but it's rare.
Tell me... Mason. Okay, yeah.
So Teddy brought up Mason Ho as an incredible free surfer. We were talking about some of the greatest free surfers out there. And, you know, I think I had said Rob Machado and Craig Anderson. And we talked about Dane.
I love
Mason Ho. Your thoughts on Mason Ho?
First of all, I love Mason Ho.
I do too. I think he's a great guy. He's a free spirit. He is fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan too. And I've spent time with Mason in and out of the water, and not enough to call him a friend, but definitely I've spent time with him over the past 5 years, and I like him a lot. I think he's nothing but just a kind, like the image that you see online is his true self. Like,
yeah,
he's a cool dude.
Yeah.
But I've actually received a number of tweets and emails about a video of Mason Ho that I'll just play for you now, which is during Surfline's Wave of the Winter contest, they asked Mason to describe his perfect wave. And this
has got to be one of the funniest. I don't know. Is it embarrassing as surfers?
Let the viewers decide.
I hope they can
themselves.
Listen. I hope they can hear it. You're going to have to crank it up. So
I know.
Give it some volume.
My wave of the winter, the gnarliest. Like, if we could do anything, I'd say the gnarliest one would be, like, take off. not at the normal second reef, just a little bit more outside and deep, and then take off on like a 6-11. Or nah. Yeah, take off on something like a underneath a 7-foot board. Take off out the back there. Take off switch foot, boom, goofy foot, ride in, little top turn, boom, jump regular, cruise. See a boogie board chick trying to go, oh, come in, honey, drop in, no worries, boom, cruising. Let her drop in, pack, little chop hop behind her so she doesn't see. Boom, come in, cross right there, right, and she's in a crossover, just fucking somehow scoop her onto the board and get her on the board and then just grab rail coming into the inside. Nah, and when she gets on, do a little fade too, a little fade look down, and then look at her like ass, and then just boom, grab right by it. So everyone on the beach just thinks that you're grabbing her ass, but it's really the rail. And then so you grab the rail, but her butt's right there, and you're just looking at it, not even looking at the wave, just like, oh, and then boom, you just go from that butt to just crystal clear, like prettiest wave in the world, and you're just like, oh my, and you just forget about it, and you just adjust your stamps and just step on her back and just, and then just like, go like this, look at the beach, yeah, boys, and then just let the lip, boom, fall over you, and then you're just like in there with the chick, and then can't say what you're doing with her in the barrel because it's so a secret. Only water. If there's a water angle, then you're lucky. So you're with the chick in the barrel and you're just getting pitted over a couple foam balls. Even a foam ball in front, so you can't even see what we're doing. And then, boom, when we come out of the barrel, I want my pants to be on my head. And the chick's wetsuit all, like, or whatever, chick's wetsuit on, perfect. But then her hair all screwed up, and then don't even claim the wave. Just kind of, like, whoosh, shoo her off, and then do a little, like, little method. Boom, and then land it, and just act like you're coming in, and just whoosh, Johnny boy hard kick out, boom, and then paddle right all the way back out, like through Pupukea, like so no one can talk to you, like you just got it to yourself, just like uh-huh, wave of the winner, motherfuckers, wave of the winner. And then so that would be my, like, literally my dream wave.
All right. Wow. Mason Ho's dream wave.
Okay,
so yeah. A number of people emailed that to me, and a couple of them were because I went on a rant during one show about just like professionalism in surfing.
Yes.
And how we need to kind of steer clear of the Spicoli stereotype. But while I believe that's true for us professionals in the industry and the big brands, when they're, you know, Instagramming, they need to know that,
or press releases, or
yeah, yeah, they need to know that a lot is two words, you know, basic information. Hey, like that.
I learn something every time we do this, David. Thank you.
But that's literally what I saw on one of the big brands' Instagrams. But so I have ranted with that, but I also can't help but be charmed by Mason Ho's Spicoli stereotype image. You know what I mean? Like, I love that about him. And so, I don't know. I'm conflicted.
I think people are charmed by that. I think surfers themselves kind of get that. Although it does make us as a whole, as a unit, the concept of surfers, you know, as a global body, it makes us look kind of stupid. But
yeah,
it's pretty funny.
It's hilarious. It's super funny. If you don't know if you're not a surfer watching that, it's funny. But it's even funnier if you do know Pipeline and Pupukea and like all those details, you know? I thought it was brilliant.
It's a little bit misogynist, though. I'm not sure.
Also funny.
I'm not sure what Corey Schumacher would say about that.
I mean, I agree with you. It is misogynistic, but I find the humor in it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not misogynistic. I just think that that was funny the way that Mason described that.
You're not allowed to have fun.
Okay.
Yes. Well, that was good.
Mason has enough fun for both.
Look, that video made its way around Facebook and Instagram, and all. A lot of people saw that, and it even made its way on. I found it through some website that was making fun of surfers, saying,
yeah,
"Look, surfers are lame, stupid, Spicoli-like characters. Here's proof positive. Here's professional surfer Mason Ho. Listen to this guy talk. Can you believe what he's saying?"
Yeah.
They say something like he needs to come up for air, or he doesn't get enough oxygen, or
something along those lines. I saw that too. I think it was on break.com.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's made its rounds, but I don't know. It's brilliant. I loved it. Like, if you were a comedian, you could not script it funnier than that. Like, Mason's classic.
I hope that that was one take, and that was like sincerely one take, which I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, I'm not sure how long Mason thought about that dream wave of the winter, but it certainly was a dream wave.
Seemed off the cuff to me, man.
He sort of left out the smell of her perfume and the plumeria that was perhaps placed perfectly behind her ear as she dropped in.
We'll have to wait for next winter.
Yeah.
He'll have another dream wave. Tell me about the San Diego Surf Festival, or the San Diego Film Surf Film
Yeah,
Festival.
San Diego Surf Film Festival, wow, big success, you know, sold out crowds and a lot of fun. I saw the Derek Dunphy piece on Twig. It was pretty good, you know, just, it was rather raw. I don't think there was a lot of thought put into it.
Oh, okay.
It was a short film, 15 minutes of Twig, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was neither good nor bad. It was just a short film on Twig, you know.
Okay.
It was a stoker. And then I saw a movie called Granite Stoke, which was about New Hampshire, surfing in New Hampshire.
The Granite State? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
New Hampshire's the Granite State, so it's called Granite Stoke Granite Stoke. And that film was neat, and there were some really great moments. There was also, like most surf films, it was filled with sort of the same old cliches, you know, which is what, when I look at surf films with a critical eye, that's probably the one thing that I find problematic, is that they're filled with the same old, you know, surfing so wonderful, it changed my life. You know, surfing, if you're a surfer, only a surfer knows the feeling.
Right.
If you're a surfer, you have to go to the North Shore. Every surfer has to do that. Surfing in this community is special. When I think about all my sessions, I always think about my home break.
Right.
Like, there's just so many cliches that have been done over and over and over and over that when I hear them in a surf film, I think to myself, really? The filmmaker couldn't come up with anything better than what we've heard millions and millions of times?
Yeah.
And look, I don't want to take anything away from the passion that was put into these films. I think it's important that we do these films, that these films exist, that film festivals exist. But I would just ask that we up the level a little bit. We up the quality of storytelling. I've told you, I believe I've told you this, but I want to hear a story about why surfing sucks. You know, I want somebody to make a film about why I quit surfing.
Hmm.
We know all the reasons why surfing's great. Please don't make me a film, make a film about that again. I don't want to hear about how great surfing is and how it changed your life and how, you know, the surfing community rallied around. You know, there's one central part of this movie. There's this little girl named Molly who sadly passes away from cancer.
Wow.
And the surf community there rallies around her. And it's great. And I actually got choked up. You know, I welled up a little bit in my eyes. And it was very touching. But then they went on to say that, hey, you know what? This community's special because we rallied around Molly and her parents. Well, guess what? Every community rallies around kids with cancer. And it's not just your community is what I'm saying. And so they sort of made it seem like, hey, this community's special because we rallied around. Well, that's not the case. It was special that you did rally around her and her family. But there's communities right now that are rallying around kids with cancer all around the world.
It wasn't unique to the surfing community.
Right. Yeah. And that's sort of what, you know, if I'm going to be hypercritical. But again, I find myself kind of parsing my words a little bit because I don't want to dampen anyone's enthusiasm to make a surf film. I would just suggest to you that you really find something unique and go with it and don't make the same old surf film.
Well, the best film, the best documentaries, regardless of surf or not, are just about individuals, and they go into depth about telling an individual story. And so that's kind of what I'm more interested in, is I would love to know the story of somebody with an interesting life who happens to surf. You know, surfing's part of their life, but...
Well, here's the thing. Here's the character in this movie, right? To me, the character in this movie is the state of New Hampshire.
Okay.
And surfing in New Hampshire. And they had some great footage of these guys that are hardcore snow. You know, but this film could have been done in 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And it was 40 minutes.
Right.
And so there's, you know, obviously editing issues. But again, I'm not saying it was a bad film. It was a great movie. I'm glad they made. I'm just sitting here telling you that, look, as sort of a a talking head here on the podcast, I have to tell you the way I felt about it. And that's the way I felt about not just that film, but lots of surf films. And I've seen lots of surf films. And quite frankly, films that I've made that were horrible and cliche-ridden. And it's time to up our game a little bit and let's do something. And like I said, one of the greatest films I saw was a film about surfing in Finland. This was last year, not this year. And because Finland became the story. That's interesting to me. That's the character. That's the protagonist. And
I agree. With surf, whether it's documentary film or just surf edits, you know, just surf porn edits, so to speak, both of those have become very tired to me. Like, I haven't really seen anything in probably years now that really inspired me or was fresh or new. There's probably a few actually that I have, but I can't think of them now. Maybe we've talked about them on the show, but by and large, it's like people just keep following the same formula and it is tired.
It is.
Was there any that you saw that you loved?
No, but I only saw three movies.
One night, basically.
Yeah, I just went to one night. I saw three movies and, nothing that I loved, but I'm sure there were some great films. I only saw just a small sampling of what was available. And again, I'm not saying they were bad. I'm just saying that certainly there could be improvements. And there were many moments in the films that were great. And I'm not here to... I don't want to be the guy that poo-poos the filmmaker's movie. Because I know how much heart and passion it goes into making a film. It's hard. And there's no money in it. It's time-consuming.
Sounds like podcasting.
Yeah.
But you're also a guy who's seen hundreds and hundreds of surf films. So for an average viewer at the film festival, they might have loved some of this stuff because it was fresh to them, you know?
Yeah.
I reached out. I mentioned last podcast that I wanted to do a show from there or with some of the filmmakers. I emailed, I would say, six of the filmmakers, none of which transpired to an interview. So that was unfortunate.
They didn't get back to you or just didn't work out or whatever?
Half didn't get back and half were out of town. And so it was like, I kind of, these questions that you and I have right now that we're bringing up is the exact stuff that I wanted to discuss with them.
Yeah.
And I'm unfortunately haven't been able to pull those together, but maybe we'll make it happen, you know, on a month unrelated to the Surf Film Festival. Just do it on its own.
It used to be uncrowded. Now it's crowded. We should do something about the etiquette in the lineup.
Mm. Is that...
That's
that was
another
one
of the themes? No, I mean,
really?
There's just the same themes throughout every single movie. It's really? No kidding, dude. Yeah. You had to put this on film? Can you send me an email?
On a completely, incidental note, one media platform that I've really enjoyed lately... are surfing magazines flip books. Have you seen those?
No.
Okay. So they're basically a digital magazine. So
do you have to subscribe?
No, you don't. Surfing magazine's been producing them after each event, after each ASP WCT event. So rather than devoting a lot of space in the print publication to that, you know, to a contest, they've been creating these digital magazines, which run 100 pages sometimes, that are really easy to navigate and use. Like, there's a website that you publish them on called Issue, and you basically just click on it. It opens up into your full screen, and you just flip through pages, and you could zoom in. You can read the text real clearly. But because there's no advertising in them either. It's just their staff photographers and staff writers unpacking the event, the contest. And they're really well done. And it's like all this great imagery that they spend 2 weeks compiling during this contest. They cover a lot of the free surfing a lot of the time. So it's not just the event, but it's everything that surrounds the event. Really cool portraits, really cool dialogue and captions and stuff. They're fantastic. So I'll post the last events. I'm sure that they'll then post a Rio flip book because that event just ended yesterday. But I'll post the Bells Beach one at least because I know that's published already.
I guess that's a good segue into the Rio event, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of ASP stuff, actually. A couple acquisitions. Rio just ended.
Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Michelle Burez.
Sally Fitzgibbon.
And Sally, yeah.
Sally Fitzgibbons.
The Spartan and Sally Fitzgibbons.
Yeah. Two Spartans, kind of.
Yeah,
Sally's
she's sort
quite
of
Spartan.
Spartan-like.
What were your thoughts? Did you watch the event?
I did. I watched the event. Selfishly disappointed that my fantasy surfer team sort of failed me, but no one really cares about that. From a viewer's standpoint, it's a little disappointed in the wave quality and the location, you know.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, part of me is like, you know what? It's a good changeup. It's kind of neat that they have it in basically in, you know, crappy beach break. Although it wasn't that crappy. I mean,
it was pretty crappy.
It was pretty crappy.
There was a couple rounds that had good
waves.
That's
exactly right. Yeah. There was a couple rounds.
Literally two rounds.
The thing is, I find myself saying, you know what? I can watch Mick Vanning and Joel and Kelly and some of the guys in crappy waves. But there's some heats where I go, really? I don't really want to watch, you know, Tiago Perez and Rayone Monteiro in a heat in crappy waves.
Yeah.
It's just not entertaining.
Yeah, well, I would argue I don't want to watch any of those guys in crappy waves when we could watch them in great waves. This isn't a we're not trying to find out who's the best surfer in crappy waves this year. We've got the finest athletes in the world and the most fine. They're finely tuned, and it's like, let's put them in high class, high quality conditions and watch them run on all gears, you know, all cylinders firing.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
Well, it's well put.
And we also already have two arguably superior beach break stops on tour in Portugal at Super Tubos and France at Hossiger. And it's like, I'd rather see those. We already have those events. We don't need another punchy beach break, you know?
Yeah.
A third punchy beach break. So I all in all, did not enjoy this event.
I'm glad it happened so quickly. They kind of pounded through it.
Yeah, they did. And a lot of shakeups too, like Mick Vanning losing in, you know, the third round, and kind of guys winning heats that you didn't expect to win heats. Chloe Andino obviously made the final.
Yeah, that was a breakthrough performance for Chloe.
Travis Logie, you know, had a pretty impressive performance. Like, guys that just kind of, they were able to leapfrog a few spots in the rankings.
Travis Logie is good for one or two events where he goes pretty far each year, you know.
Actually, he went farther than I expected, but he didn't win the heat. There was a controversial heat where he used priority to drop in on Chloe Andino, and it was pretty blatant. Like, he was just doing it so that he'd get hindered by Chloe, who had taken off on the wave deeper. Dropped in straight on Chloe, blocked Chloe, and it was just the shoulder of the wave. Like, there was no scoring potential in that wave, but the judges deemed that Chloe hindered his scoring potential, gave Chloe the interference, But because it was such a low scoring heat, Kaloe beat Travis with one wave, which was only like a 6.5 or a 6.7.
And that speaks to how bad the waves were.
It does, because there was a lot of heats that guys made it through without a 10 point total. You know, with fours and threes and fours.
And I saw, you know, there was a heat, I want to say the quarters or semis with Adriano and Kelly Slater, and Adriano caught one wave in 30 minutes.
Yeah, Kelly got his 10.
At a beach break where there's tons of wind swell, you'd think you'd catch more than one wave. Yeah, that was the heat where Kelly got the 10.
Kelly got a 10 right at the beginning, backed it up with a 5. Adriano got a 3.4 or something.
With like 2 minutes left.
And yeah, never got a second wave.
Now the 10 needs to be talked about because... Okay. That was mind blowing. I mean, that was when you the angle looking down the beach, the second angle they show you.
Yeah,
it's pretty incredible. I mean, if you want to know who the best surfer in the world is, yeah, I think it's pretty clear.
It's Kelly Slater.
It's Kelly Slater.
I'm not going to argue against that point.
Go ahead.
But you know,
I dare you.
I don't know. Maybe this is blasphemous to say, but when I saw that, it reminded me of that 10 that he got at Pipeline against John this past year, where he free fall dropped into the barrel and got blown out, kind of hands free. And blasphemous, because how could you compare pipe to a Rio beach break? But it had that same like double up, you know, free fall, scary drop into no handing the barrel and then coming out unpredictably. So I think that his pipeline wave prepared him for the challenges of Rio.
Kelly, that I don't know if any other surfer could have done that.
No, it's insane.
I really don't, yeah. You know? Maybe I'm wrong, but pretty incredible.
Let me ask you this. Are there any benefits to having the stop in Rio that you can see?
Well, from the ASP standpoint, there are. I mean, it's sort of like bringing, you know, I hate to use this cliche, but it's like bringing the circus to town. And it's great for the economy. It's great for the ASP's economy. It's great for their image. They really get to stroke the Brazilian professionals and bring them the light in the media. It's like having an event in New York City. You know?
Yeah.
It's a big media circus for everyone involved down there. And probably there's, you know, even the non-Brazilian surfers get a lot of benefit, of the Australians and the Americans and so forth. So I get why they're doing it, but you could and you already made the great point that, look, at the end of the day, if it's really about great waves, then that shouldn't be a spot or a stop on the tour.
I think there's probably a lot of other events that they can do there that would have some of the same benefit that don't have to be a CT event. You know, some of the QS, like the Prime event at Sakurama, is happening next week, and they can incorporate some of that same community benefit into that event, I would think.
Maybe, but from the ASP standpoint, look, they want to showcase their finest. They want Kelly Slater there in front of the entire Brazilian media.
Yeah. You know,
surfing in Brazil is like it is in Australia. It's front page news.
Right.
It's a big, big deal. So it's kind of like having a world tennis stop. You know, like you got to have one in your main country.
I do like that there seems to be a lot of community outreach with that stop. The Waves for Water campaign, which is partnered with Hurley, gets a lot of the Hurley team riders to go and work there. I saw that Kelly Slater went and worked with mixed martial arts fighter Vitor Belfort in one of the jiu-jitsu gyms there and went and did demos and hung out with all the kids. And so I see a lot, especially on people's Instagrams, surfers' Instagrams, going and doing community outreach and working with kids in the favelas, you know, because there's a lot of poverty.
Yeah, and that's all very cool. And so, you know, are you going to give it a pass because of that?
No, heck no.
Yeah.
But I think, again, they should incorporate some of that stuff into other events. We don't need a CT event. I mean, really what it amounts to is it's boring to the event itself is boring to watch from a viewer standpoint. You watch 10 or 15 waves get ridden just to see one 5-point ride.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, the percentage of eights and tens that we saw throughout the event was probably the lowest we'll see all year on tour. And that's worth noting and taking into consideration, you know, for where we hold events.
I don't see them taking this event off the tour. It's just got too much. There's too much upside for all the other aspects that we mentioned. Regardless that the waves are horrible and can be horrible. It's just... There's just too much politics.
Well, as they're the new ownership of the ASP, as they're growing it, they might keep it on tour just to kind of placate the right people and to build revenues. But maybe after 2 or 3 years, when they have all those things in place, they'll start to be a little bit more selective in their venues. There was a couple acquisitions, though, that the ASP made since we had our last show.
Acquisitions or licensing agreements?
Yeah, licensing agreements. Acquisitions of the licensing, maybe? Can we say that?
I don't know.
I don't know either what the right terminology is, but you're right. Yeah, licensing.
Well, licensing is Vans owns it, and then they go, look, we'll license it to you for 3 years, right? You know.
Yeah. So they
Vans Triple Crown, right?
They licensed the Vans Triple Crown and the XXL Awards.
Yeah.
They already own the Big Wave World Tour.
Yeah.
So now they have the awards ceremony.
That makes so much sense, and that's really Graham Stapelberg, who worked at Billabong, who dealt with the XXL Awards for probably 10 or 15 years or more. Him now working for the ASP going, hey, Paul Speaker, this event, the XXL Awards, is going to keep the ASP in you know, the world limelight, in the media's spotlight for a long time. It's a no-brainer, and I really see that acquisition sort of at the hands of Graham Stapelberg. I'm sure he had a lot to do. He really got into Paul Speaker's ear. Not that he probably needed to. I'm sure Paul saw the light too, but I really sense that was Graham Stapelberg's doing.
And when they acquired the Big Wave World Tour, this is kind of goes right with it.
It kind of does.
How could you not
do
the big ceremony at the end of the year? Or if you did your own ceremony, it would compete with this, conflict with it. But let me ask you this. Does it change anything for us, the viewers, now that the ASP is involved with it?
With the XXL Awards?
Yeah.
It might make it a better production. It's a horrible production from a... The thing that's cool about the XXL Awards is the 10-minute montage before the award ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And then the award ceremony starts, and you get some really eloquent speakers like Greg Long, and you get some not-so-great speakers. And basically, like any award show, it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll make the montage more powerful, although the montage is mind-blowingly good. Bill Sharp puts it together with some producers, and it's awesome. And I've gone to the XXL Awards and left right after the montage, knowing I don't want to hear all of these drunk guys on stage.
Right.
And I think so maybe what we'll see is an elongation of the montage sequences and maybe a shortening of the speeches somehow.
Hmm. Well, we just had the 2014 Awards, and you made predictions in our last show. And I think they came true, right?
I don't even know.
Yeah, Greg Long won.
Okay,
that backside barrel at Puerto Escondido.
Yeah.
And then I think Keala Kenley won too, which was your other pick.
Keala and Greg Long. Yeah. And then there was the Tube Bride of the Year, which I don't know who won that. Koa Rothman I had chosen.
Yeah, Koa won that too.
Yeah.
So good calls, man.
Hey, I'm a voting member of the Academy. They're probably going to take me off as a voting member after my criticism here on the air.
Well, and after you don't even know the results of who won.
Well, I watched it, and I watched the montage, and I watched Graham Stapelberg up there, who's very eloquent. But once you start getting into...
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you've been to one award show, you've been to a million of them, and you kind of lose it.
Well, I think part of the benefit with the ASP being involved now is co-sponsorship stuff. Like... that's really what they're doing with the WCT tours as well, which is partnering with Samsung, getting more money invested into it, getting more eyeballs on it. You know, that's also their partnership with YouTube. It's like, let's try to get this out to the masses. More eyeballs equal more sponsors equals more dollars that we can then spread around to the surfers. So, you know, we can debate whether that's good for the sport or not. We have in the past, but the reality is, you know, they'll be able to improve some of the production stuff that you're talking about and maybe some of the awards too, you know, the prize money for the surfers.
A cool thing that they could do in Rio, as I think about it, is let's say they have the event at that island on the...
Fernando?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That island has great waves. It's a national park. There's no infrastructure for a major event there, but they could have the contest there and then beam the event live to downtown Rio at an event structure and have like a... What do they call those fan experiences, you know, where you just have massive large screens and you have the event going on in great waves in Brazil and you have tons of energy around the Rio de Janeiro Fan Festival, but still great waves that they can all see, although you're not there in person. But the Brazilian fan base is so passionate that I could see them showing up with flags, being excited about their guys in their heats and jumping up and down and singing songs about Brazil right there in downtown Rio as the good waves unfold on the other coast.
That location, Fernando, whatever it
is. De Nahorana.
Yeah. Have you been there?
No, but I would love to go there. It
looks
beautiful.
So incredible.
And that's like, another thing. From a tourism standpoint, they could really highlight that area.
It's like, they refer to it, it's like Jurassic Park, you know? And the waves are crystal clear blue water and perfect beach break barrels.
It looks beautiful. I would love to go there.
Yeah, I would love to surf there too. And then the ASP's involvement with the Triple Crown license. They're basically saying that it shouldn't change much for the viewers. Vans is still the title sponsor. One key factor, though, that I read was that the new feature of this year's Billabong Pipe Masters, which is part of the Triple Crown, will be the Pipe Trials event.
Right.
They're going to do an event within the event.
Right.
So it'll exist like the normal trials events do in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Previously, the two wildcard entries came from the Vulcan Pipe Pro, I think.
Well, yeah, a series of events in Hawaii.
Okay.
Vulcan Pipe Pro being one of them, but there was a series of events that led to like the Hawaiian champion that got the two guys that got their seeds.
Right. And in the past, wasn't it more than two local wildcards, though?
Well, yeah. There's like,
there was like
16
10.
Or something,
yeah.
You know? And so the winners of the Vulcan Pipe did get in. The top two guys, and then they also took the top HPAC guys, the Hawaiian Pro HPAC guys, and put them in there. And that was, so that equaled like a total of 12 or 14 Hawaiian local pipeline specialists.
Right.
And now they're taking all of those specialists and putting them into a trials event, which they used to do. They used to do a trials event, you know, not too long ago, 99 or something.
So 32 pipeline specialists and local Hawaiian professional surfers will be vying for two wild card spots.
Right.
And then there's an additional $100,000 prize purse for that trial.
That money is to acquiesce and to appease the locals. Because I don't think the locals are stoked on going back to this.
Right.
They want all of their guys in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going, look, we're going to do a trials like we used to. There's only going to be two of you guys in the main event getting all the positive media play and airtime and the potential to be a pipeline champion. There's only two of you. But we're going to give you $100,000 for the trials. So guess what? You're going to win a bunch of money too. I'm probably going to spread that $100,000 over all of you. So you're all going to get some money because they all want to get paid.
Well, among 32 people, that's a decent paycheck even for last place.
Yeah. I mean, let's say they get $50,000 and then spill the rest of the $50,000 out amongst the remaining field. It's going to be pretty good for them. And when I read that, I said, okay, this is how they're going to appease them because otherwise that wouldn't play very well.
Yeah, and that was a complaint that we had with the last season, too, was just like, why is the wild card entry system different for this event than other events? So I'm glad to see it it go this way. And also, it benefits the WCT guys who wait all year to surf pipeline, basically. And even if they go surf it in the winter, they're really not going to get waves. So this gives them same access to the break and to this contest that they have in the other events throughout the year. Because the way it worked last year was the first round for them was an elimination round, you know? Whereas in other events, the second they get, if they win the first round, they leapfrog to the third. If they lose in the first, they get to go into the second and have a second chance, basically. So this allows that to take place at pipeline.
I also heard some chatter on the message boards about Marty Thomas and the Triple Crown guys had a meeting with the permit people in Honolulu. They came out of the meeting basically saying, what happened in the meeting? And there was some chatter that, well, this now means that all heats are man on man.
Oh, really?
Which I thought all the heats were man on man anyway, even though they were overlapping man on man.
Okay.
Were there any 3-man heats? I think even in like the reef event at Haleiwa and Sunset Beach, I don't know. We would need to do some more research on this.
Okay.
But I heard some chatter online about all heats are going to be man-on-man heats. I can't imagine they're going to do that at Sunset Beach. But
no.
We'll see.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. Interesting, though. I mean, I could see him doing it at Pipe.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before they had to do overlapping heats, maybe now they're just not going to have overlapping heats because the main event's only going to have 32 guys.
Right. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll get back to that. I mean, they probably haven't even published that information, but you and I can ask a few people and then talk about it on our next show. Get to the bottom of it. You want to hear about a shark deterrent wetsuit?
Yes.
All right. Hamish Jolly is a swimmer and entrepreneur in Australia. And he basically did a TED Talk talking about this wetsuit that he's created. And basically, it's just a wetsuit with that's banded with white stripes to kind of replicate natural poisonous marine life. And they've done tests with it, of course, in the ocean and shark's natural environment, where they put a dummy with the wetsuit on versus a dummy with a black neoprene wetsuit. And they film it, and they have video of that in his TED Talk. And I'll post the TED Talk on surfsplendorpodcast.com. His invention works.
And does the other wetsuit, the black one, gets munched on?
Gets eaten.
Yeah. And the other one doesn't get eaten.
Correct. So the striped white wetsuit is a shark deterrent, basically, based on their research.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I noticed during the Margaret...
You get that from my knees down.
You get it for your whole body.
I don't need it for my whole... I'm not going to be in the water that... I mean, my knees my legs are dangling over my board. When I think I'm going to get attacked.
Do you ever paddle?
Yes. So I'll need it on my arms. I'll need it on my arms and on my legs. But I don't need it on my torso.
He has like a diamond kind of shape in the torso that is black. And everything else is striped. So you kind of nailed it. But I noticed during the Margaret River event, I think it was Taj Burrow's caddy had a wetsuit like that. That was like homemade though. It looked like he had even sprayed it with white stripes. And so this research had been out there for a while, but this is the first guy who's actually done significant amount of research on his own. And he's having an independent study, like research group, also kind of do their own research. So it'll be a while before the wetsuits come to market. But he was saying, you know, I look at 10 years in the future and I can't imagine that wetsuits will still be black.
I would agree with that. That makes tons of sense. Why wouldn't we just go with the white stripes? So this suggests then that there's no animal in the ocean that has white stripes or that has this striped camouflage feature that gets attacked by sharks.
Well, he used the example of the pilot fish, which swim with the shark and feed off the shark, which the shark never attacks. You know, and there's snake species in Fiji that have that same banding on them. It's a very... and then there's some species that actually convert to that when they go into defense mode. You know, they can alter their look. So
the only problem is we don't look good in stripes.
It makes you look fat, actually. They're horizontal. I wonder if we could do vertical stripes.
They better go vertical. Elongate. Especially for us middle-aged men.
This kind of relates, though, to the shark calling controversy that exists there that we talked about in the past.
Yes, WA, Western Australia.
That actually came to an end. I don't know if you remember when we reported on it. They were doing like a 3-month trial window of shark calling.
Yeah.
They ended that recently. And so what they found was that since January, more than 100 sharks were caught on the drum lines. And I think, let's see, it says many were released because they were smaller than the 3-meter minimum size, but at least a few dozen sharks were killed, including smaller sharks that were drowned after being hooked. In one case, an 8-foot tiger shark was revived by conservationists after it was released from the large hook.
Hmm.
So interesting. And I don't think all the, you know, the data points are in to really determine whether or not it was successful or not. But that's the update. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Have you seen this, speaking of sharks, have you seen this Laird Hamilton golf board? So Laird Hamilton, you know, the one that many blame for the stand-up paddle invasion or popularity. Laird has invented this new golf board, which is basically, it's like a Segway. And in this video, Laird paddles through a lagoon, steps off his stand-up paddleboard, steps right onto this Segway for golfing, and is immediately on the first tee box with a 3-wood in his hand. And as the it's a skateboard with big wheels on it. As it moves through the fairway, Laird is swinging the golf club and hitting the ball and moving along at a brisk clip here.
On land,
on a golf course.
So it's like amphibious vehicle.
Yeah.
Oh, so it doesn't go on water.
No.
I'm
sorry. It's for golfing.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's for golfing, and the idea is to increase the speed of play.
I get it.
Preserve the traditional game of golf, but change the way.
So anyway, that's...
Okay, so it's a motorized skateboard for the golf course.
It's a motorized Segway, like a mall cop thing.
Gotcha. I had envisioned exactly as you had described it, but on water. And he designed it?
Here he goes. We're watching Laird now. I don't know if he designed it, but he's their official spokesperson.
Wow, he gets involved in some weird stuff, dude. Like in terms of the various projects that surfers have been involved with over the years, he picks some weird ones.
He does. Anyway, so the Laird golf board, I don't think you'll see that on fairways anytime soon. I don't know.
Gosh. If
that's going to go over very well.
Wow.
Amongst the traditional golf world.
Yeah. Did you hear that our Chaz Smith, who we've discussed at length in this show, is leaving surf writing?
Yes.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's hanging up his,
yeah,
his surf pen.
Published a piece on Surfing Magazine, and this is a month or two old news,
yeah,
but we never got around to talking about it previously.
Yeah.
But basically saying he's going back to war correspondence and abandoning surf writing. So,
well, good for him.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's out on top. Go out on top.
Yeah, I guess. Is he on top?
He
wrote a book.
He did a pretty good be on book. Top. I mean, people are talking about it. I don't think he's allowed back on the North Shore.
Yeah, but. Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell is the name of his book that we've discussed.
Yeah.
For those who haven't listened, controversial book on the North Shore.
You should definitely read it. It's a great read.
Yeah.
Super fun, easy to read book.
I've been following him on Instagram, and he's been posting a lot of stuff from, I think he's in Georgia right now, but a lot of stuff from the Middle East. So, interesting. You know?
Now, I want to share with the listeners and with you, David, my favorite podcast. And
Surf Splendor podcast, obviously.
No, what? You're wrong. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to tell you.
Have you ever listened to an episode?
Yes.
All right.
I listened to the Corey Schumacher episode.
All right.
The Thomas Jefferson Hour is an incredible podcast. It's produced by two gentlemen. One, Clay Jenkinson, who is a academic, he's a humanitarian scholar, and he's an expert on everything Thomas Jefferson. And in the Thomas Jefferson Hour podcast, Clay goes into character as President Jefferson, and then his co-host asks the president questions about just relevant issues of the day, today, or back in Jefferson's era.
They'll have a different topic each show.
Each show they have a different topic, and it's fascinating. I'm a history geek, and I find it just I can't get enough of the Thomas Jefferson Hour podcast. So if you're not listening to Surf Splendor podcast
or
Down the Line Radio, you might check out, and if you're a history freak like me, you might check out the Thomas Jefferson Hour. And I'll have you know that they take phone calls from listeners and they take emails much like we do. And I have called in and been on the Thomas Jefferson Hour podcast, and I asked President Jefferson about surfing, what he thought of the idea of riding waves, the idea of spending idle time chasing waves down, nothing of any sort of industrious endeavor. It's all quite, seems to be, just lazy, quite frankly, what we do. And you'll have to listen to President Jefferson's response. And this was a few years ago now.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Well, you just had your third old man moment.
I did.
Yeah, we talked about this previously on this show.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
God. My God.
And you told that story, too, about calling in.
You let me go. You just dangled me out there.
Of course, dude.
You're just like fishing. You're just like, look at this old man running.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
I'm not doing bad for 65.
That's true. Maybe some people didn't listen to that episode, so I thought it was worth you going into it again.
Oh, you dangled me out there, David.
No.
Yes, you let me run like an old man with Alzheimer's. Just let me walk down the block and grab me before I got lost.
The level of expertise that guy has, Jenkinson, is pretty amazing. He can talk. He's like,
have you listened to it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you like it?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't? Oh, well, you got to be a fan.
I do like it, but I only like certain subjects that they talk about. Like, they did an episode on intellectual property, which was kind of boring, but then they did an episode on Benjamin Franklin, and that was really interesting.
Yeah.
They did an episode on wine, because Thomas Jefferson was huge into wine.
Yes, he was.
So I listened to that, and that was really interesting. The women of Jefferson, I thought, was pretty good too. So yeah, the amount of detail and expertise that he has is, of course, makes it compelling.
Well, he's incredible. I just want to double check his name. I don't know if it's Jenkinson or if it's Jenkins. Clay Jenkinson. Jenkinson. I find the show fascinating, but I am a Jefferson geek, so.
Yeah, very cool.
Chris Ward caught an incredible wave at Puerto Escondido. I don't know if you saw it on Surfline or not. It was
my must-see moment, dude.
That's your must-see moment. Yes. That's an incredible tube ride. It was just last week during the South Swell. And Chris Ward will be at the boardroom. You can come talk to Chris and Corey Lopez about Chris's wave. But enough about the boardroom. That ride was incredible. Very late drop. He almost skidded out at the bottom. He sort of bumped his rail and finally caught his line. And pretty neat ride. One that kind of makes you go, you know what? I need to go to Puerto. That was insane.
Made me think I never need to go to Puerto.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
Heavy closed out beach breaks, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, that ride to me, it is my must-see moment. Not to jump ahead in the show, but it's my must-see moment because it reminds me of everything that I grew up loving about Chris Ward. Like, and I did. You know, I loved Chris Ward, and I used to see stuff like that from him all the time. You know, and nowadays we don't see it as frequently, and when we do see him, he doesn't always have that same amount of spontaneity and just radical rawness. But that moment was the epitome of it. He's reckless.
Yeah.
You know, he's completely reckless in his approach to surfing.
Yeah.
Just paddles into this triple overhead thumping beach break like way too late. And then just all he's looking at is making it to the bottom. But when he does that, he then instinctively just kind of digs in and jumps up into the line that he needs to take, kind of free falls in, barely catches his fins at the bottom, jumps into the high line, and then the thing just almost closes out, just runs way down the beach without him. You can't even see him. You're looking into it, can't see him. The thing spits. He comes flying out, and he's just enthusiastic, like claiming it accidentally. It's just an insane ride. And I don't know. I love Chris. You know?
Yeah, you nailed it. Reckless is a great way to describe his approach to surfing characteristics.
Yeah. So definitely a radical wave.
Well, I don't know what else you got. I have a busy day ahead of me here, David Scales. So.
I got a Duke and a Kook.
Okay.
What do you want first?
The Duke, Kahanamoku.
Okay. The Duke is a follow-up from a topic I brought up last show, which is Dustin Barca running for mayor.
I saw that. He actually has filed his papers.
He has. So I said, you know...
What do you think the chances of Dustin Barca becoming the mayor?
I think they're really good.
You do?
I do. If it's based on votes?
Yeah, well, that's what it's based on.
He's mobilized that community in droves. So I would think that, yeah, he'd be a huge...
I would bet that there's some, how do you say, ghosts in the closet? Is that the right phrase?
Yeah.
Doesn't he have a criminal record?
Skeletons in the closet?
Yeah, skeletons in the closet.
Yeah, but that's all out in the open. They're not in the closet, and I don't think anybody cares.
And you could be right, especially in that community, which is, it's pretty passionate about its Hawaiian heritage, and Dustin seems to be on that side of the argument and all of this stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I do know that whoever his challenger is going to be from sort of that pro-business, that pro-right wing, and there's going to be a lot of money there. And I don't know how much money is in Dustin's election coffers, but you got to think that his opponent's going to have a ton of money from corporate America, namely Monsanto. Yeah, Monsanto.
So basically, Barca for Mayor is his website. I think that to give listeners an idea, I don't know if everybody knows who Dustin Barca is, but he's a professional surfer from Kauai who gained his reputation from coming to the North Shore when he was younger. And then he's become a professional or kind of pro amateur MMA fighter as well, who's become politically active because of a lot of the genetic farming that's taking place on Kauai. And so he's mobilized a lot of the community to march against Monsanto's, the main company, but a lot of the GMOs that are kind of depleting the land in Kauai. And then also there's evidence of the water supply being poisoned and things like that. So he's been doing that for the last couple of years and developed quite a following in his march. But he said the reason why he's running for mayor in an interview that he did with Stab Magazine, I think yesterday, that he was in town one day and he knew that the current incumbent mayor was being sued by Monsanto and some of these big corporations. And then he found out that those are the companies that are actually funding that guy's campaign in the past as well, and his current campaign. So these companies are the mayor's biggest supporters, but they are the exact people who are suing him for legislation that he's trying to pass against them. So Barco was like, look at this hypocrisy and look at all the corruption in politics. Somebody needs to do something about it. And I think he had prompting from friends who said like, hey, we will financially back you to help get the funds in place to make this happen. So I agree with you that yes, he's probably underfunded compared to the incumbent. However, that matters less in Kauai than I think it would anywhere else in the United States.
Yeah.
And he's basically running for mayor of Kauai and Niihau, which is a privately owned island. I think it's the seventh largest inhabited island in the Hawaii chain.
Yeah.
But it's owned by one family, basically, and it has been since the 1800s. Basically, Dustin has four initiatives, and that is sustainable agriculture, cultural revival. His third is a war on drugs, and the fourth is restoring purity of the water supply.
Cultural revival, what does that mean?
I think it means that like a lot of the cultural monuments have been run down, basically, and there isn't a lot of money invested into them.
Mm-hmm.
And land specifically was something that I saw him talk about. National parks and things like that that have been run down with graffiti and trash and all that. So just reallocating funds to revive some of that.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. That's going to be, you know, Hawaii has a history of surfers in politics. Of course, Senator Fred Hemmings being the one that comes to mind. And he was a Republican senator in D.C. Representing Hawaii for a number of years.
I have a personal thought about it. I think politics, especially in America, are very corrupt. And I kind of keep them at an arm's length because I think everybody has, like you said, skeletons in the closet. And I don't know. Barca, what I like about Barca is that he's not a politician and that we're all very aware of his shortcomings in his personal life and professional life as well. And he's not going into it pretending to be altruistic just to get votes. Like, we've seen his altruism come out of a more pure place.
Right. But what's, I hope doesn't happen, but what I could see happening is once he gets handlers around him and they start to massage him into a politician, and within, you know, 8-9 months, whatever it is, he all of a sudden, all that stuff that you just mentioned that we love about him is gone because he's been massaged and those rough edges have been sanded down and now he just sounds like another politician. So we hope that his handlers don't take that, for lack of a better phrase, that edge off of Dustin, that they keep his motivations pure and sincere.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And I know nothing about the incumbent, so, you know, I'm not a voting citizen there, so I'm not voting for Dustin as opposed to the incumbent, but I'm supporting Dustin, I think, just from the mainland, just because I like the idea of an everyman, you know,
running for
the position.
Yeah.
So kook of the day, kook of the week.
Kook of the week.
Kook of the week. I know that you always try to make me shame one individual.
You don't have to shame. I don't want you to
That's
shame.
That's what you want.
Okay.
Yeah, I try to diffuse the kook among a group. But
what good is kook of the week if you, you know?
Well, I'm going to take it a full different direction that you didn't even see coming.
It's Beyonce's husband, Jay-Z.
So there's an Instagram account that's worth following called Kook of the Day.
And that's your kook of the week?
No, I'm actually just relating them to our kook of the week. They're doing a similar mission.
Oh my God, you have an Instagram account? Cannot be kook. It has to be a person.
You gotta check them out, actually.
All right. Kook of the day.
Kook of the day, kook underscore, you know, of, I think you got to underscore where the spaces are.
Yeah.
But basically,
this Instagram has created somebody that you think is deserving of your kook of the week.
Everybody that they put on there is deserving of the kook of the week.
Oh my, what if we get put on there?
We could get put on there, but I'm going to show you a few pictures. This one picture they posted 3 days ago is a guy buying a Wave Storm in Costco, but he's in a wetsuit.
That guy is awesome.
He's fully suited.
Embrace your inner kook. That's the greatest picture I've ever seen.
They're all user-submitted photos. People that see kooks out in their real life take a photo and send it to Kook of the Day. And
oh,
okay.
So
a guy
in
a wetsuit
in Costco.
Can anyone
post to this? Can anyone post to this?
You email it to them, and then they post it. This is a guy who's got his longboard in the back of his truck, taking it to the beach in North Carolina, but the fin, the single fin, is put on backwards.
Yes.
So that's
that guy's
a
kook, yeah.
This is a guy...
That can't be real.
This is a guy in a bank... At the teller.
He matches the aesthetic of the bank. He's got...
It's coincidental.
No.
A guy who's standing at the teller at the bank in a wetsuit. Fully suited.
Is he dripping water from his legs there?
It looks like there's a wet footprint under him as well.
Nice.
And again, it's just like a candid photo that a person in line at the bank saw. A guy standing in a wetsuit, so he took a photo of
that guy. Hey, you know what? People stand in banks in their yoga outfits and their running outfits. What's wrong with being in a full wetsuit at a bank teller?
I don't know, man. Maybe you could be on Kook of the Day if you show up like that.
I say embrace your inner kook. You know, so, the sooner that you realize that we're all kooks, the happier you'll be.
Yep. All right, cool, dude. Well, that's all I got.
All right, well, great show. Again, our emails, hello at surfsplendorpodcast.com. And surftalksandiego@gmail.com.
Even though Scott knew one email address, it was my email address.
That was the fourth old man moment of this show. And for the record, I'm not 65.
67. He's lying about his age.
Mentally, I might be 65. Anyway, until next week, thanks for listening. Adios. Aloha. I don't even know you. Taking me away from home.
Thanks for listening to today's show. Thank you, Scott Bass, for hosting. We didn't really get into it in this show, but this is a big weekend for him coming up. May 17th and 18th is the Boardroom Show, which is Scott's baby. He is the director of it, the creator of it. And it's a pretty big deal. It's the industry's largest surfboard consumer show. So it's just like any other, convention center type show for any other industry, but it's all surfboards. And it's everybody's there. I mean, board builders from iconic kind of legendary dudes from the early days all the way up to Matt Biolis and all the current guys. So if you're interested in surfboards or surfing in any capacity, it's an amazing show and you should go if you're in Southern California. It's in San Diego at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. Boardroomshow.com is his website. Everything you need to know can be found there. I'll be there. So that is it for today's show. You can find everything that we discussed in this show on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then make sure to check out the updated music archive, updated with the Spotify player. And go back and listen to all the music from past episodes. Or just search Surf Splendor on Spotify, and you can find our account and all of our playlists. So enjoy that, and thank you for listening. Thank you for always sharing this show. If you listen in iTunes or Stitcher, just make sure to rate and review the show. That helps others to find it. And I guess until next time. We'll be back with a lot of new series of board builders and shapers interviews based on this weekend's Boardroom Show. We've got a lot of stuff lined up. And we'll kind of sprinkle them in over the next few months. So not to hit you with all of, board building episodes in a row. So anyways, until next week, this is your host, David Scales, saying thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the show. We will see you next week. Aloha. And I can see the water, and I can taste the sea. I keep on moving farther, where I need to be. California, I don't even know.
stand so